Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to the program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. As always, we thank you for listening to AFR. Hope you'll stay with us. We got a lot of very interesting things to talk about with our guest, Kirby Anderson, who will be with us in just a minute. First of all, Dr. Ray Pritchard is going to help me host the program today. Good morning, Ray.
Hey, Tim. How you doing?
Doing well. Yourself?
I tell you, it's all good. It's hot here in Dallas. Mm-hmm. Big surprise. It's August. Right. It was 104 yesterday, straight up here in Dallas.
And you ride your bike?
Yes, I did. And it just about knocked me out. I woke up in the middle of the night with muscle cramps, I think because it was so hot when I rode my bike.
What's the cutoff temperature for you?
You know, I really watch this heat index, and yesterday it was getting up around 110, and that's about it.
Get over that. It seems like it'd be dangerous.
It is dangerous. It just is. You got to have the thing is, you know, like if you normally do 20 miles, maybe you do 8 or 9, something like that.
Right.
And take a lot of water with you because that heat will knock you down. I mean, it'll just flat knock you down. So
you take
fast.
Salt pills?
I drink a lot of this Gatorade kind of stuff that puts that, you know, the
electrolytes.
Yeah, puts all that stuff back in you, supposedly. It's still.
You supposed to take salt pills or not?
I don't know.
You know, that's the old school football. Remember,
right,
people say with football practice back in the 50s and 60s and 70s, the coaches would make them take salt pills. I didn't know if that was good or not.
I think these modern drinks like, you know, Gatorade and there's a bunch of others are supposed to, you know.
Put
all that good stuff back in you, which you sweat off pretty fast in the heat. So
I don't know I don't know if that's good or bad. The salt pills. I don't know.
I don't know either.
I've never really
taken salt pills.
I don't even know if they still make them anymore. I think that was the old. You got to be tough. Take your salt pill because salt pills make you thirsty.
Right. I mean,
and then they wouldn't let you have any water.
Yeah, which you know that thankfully that's all changed, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Well, do you ever see Junction Boys?
I sure did. Yeah. That's a different kind of football.
Yeah.
Back in Bear Bryant's early days at Alabama, you couldn't get away
with
that.
That was when he was at A&M.
Right. I guess you're right. He was at A&M
and then
went to Alabama.
Then went to Alabama.
You couldn't get away with that today, no. I don't think.
That was when football players were football players back then.
Men were men, yeah. You know. Put them on a bus, take them out there in the middle of nowhere and run them till they
coach,
drop.
Coach, bone sticking out of my leg. I don't care. Get up and walk it off and get back out there.
That's right. That's right. Yo.
Don't be a pansy.
That's right. Put a Band-Aid on it. You'll be fine.
All right. You're listening. That describes modern-day politics right there, too, that sports metaphor.
That's right.
A lot of people's bones are hanging out of their leg. Their legs. Well, we got with us our good friend Kirby Anderson from right down the road from you there, Ray. Kirby joins us once a month for a discussion of the issues. We call it Fire Away because we fire away with questions at Kirby, and we talk about things that are happening in the news and try to give a biblical worldview response to the issues of the day, and that's what Kirby does every day with his radio program, Point of View, which is heard here on AFR, and Probe Ministries, which is a Christian think tank, really, an analysis ministry of all kinds of issues and with Probe, and they're based out of the Dallas area. Kirby, good morning to you.
Good morning, Tim and Ray. Great to be with you guys.
What about the salt pills thing?
I don't think so anymore. I agree with Ray. Now they can put all the electrolytes in. They're not just sodium chloride. You need a lot more than just that. Probably better to drink that Gatorade or some kind of
sport. But you ever heard the old salt pill stories from the old timers?
I do remember. I think I'm older than any of you guys, okay. So I do remember that. I do remember that.
Well, it always gets me.
All the guys in wrestling and basketball trying to lose weight and all the stuff that we had to go through in high school. Don't you remember that?
What gets me is the things that they say today are healthy for you, Only to learn 20 years later, nope, right. They weren't.
Yeah.
And you've been like doing them all those years.
Yeah. And salt and all, yeah.
Who knows what we're doing today? Yeah. 10 years from now, they're going to go, you know what? That causes cancer. You know, drinking too much water. You know, well, yeah. I don't know. It's something like that or crazy will come out in the news or whatever. But all right. Well, a lot to talk about. No shortage of things in the news to talk about. Let's start out with the presidential race between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. Kirby, I want to ask you today, looking at the map of the country, I saw one yesterday. And this is typical for the last three election cycles, at least I can think of. The Democrats have a huge advantage on Election Day with the Electoral College map. Their votes are already the Electoral College numbers gets them up to within four or five swing states of capturing the presidency, because you need 270. Is 271? What is that number?
Just 270 will get you there. That's right.
Okay, and the Democrats start with 240, don't they, basically on the first Tuesday of November?
I use the number 217, but 240 works too. It depends on where you put New Mexico and a few others. But for sure, Hillary starts with 217. And then the challenger, which we'll assume, of course, is Donald Trump, starts with 206. But there's the interesting thing, Tim, right off the bat, because you do recognize that generally the red states tend to be in the middle of the country and in the south. The blue states tend to be at the two coast in northeast America, kind of a little bit of the upper Midwest and, of course, the west coast. But we've all said that both of these candidates might change the map a little bit. For example, for a while, it looked like Donald Trump was actually competitive in Connecticut. Who would have ever believed that? But more importantly, the one that's concerning the Trump campaign right now is that Hillary Clinton, if the election were held today, and if you assume the polls are right, and there's a lot of assumptions there, she might win both Georgia and Arizona. Those have always been assumed to be red states. So it's a little more concerning for the Trump campaign if they really pay attention to some of the polls that have come out.
You like the Electoral College, which we talk about a lot. A lot of people don't understand that, and I don't want to lose listeners with eyes glazed over detail here, okay? But is that good or bad in your view?
Well, the idea behind it from the framers was twofold. Number one, to have the states have some control, and number two, to force people to vote and to actually force candidates to campaign everywhere. I mean, if right now all you were elected by is the popular vote, then you know that Hillary Clinton would spend all her time in California, New York, Illinois, places like that, just try to run it up, especially in New York City and Los Angeles and those kinds of things. But given the fact that, let's take Georgia for a minute, you have to compete for 16 electoral votes. The reality, Tim and Bray, is that over time there have been kind of a solidification of some of this, so that you almost always assume that the West Coast states and the New England states, with the exception of New Hampshire, are going to always vote Democratic, no matter whether you have Hillary Clinton running or we used to call the Yellow Dog Democrat running. You know, you always have those. And then you also assume that Republicans are going to win a lot of the Midwest and the South. And so then it puts a lot more pressure on those so-called swing states, which would be Ohio, Pennsylvania, Virginia, maybe Iowa, and certainly Florida. And though you tell me who's going to win Pennsylvania, Ohio, Virginia, and Florida, I'll tell you the next president is. And
Kirby, that just goes to the bigger question. You mentioned from Hillary's side, okay, Mr. Trump, people say he's got a narrower path than Hillary does. What's a conceivable way, Kirby, that Donald Trump gets to 270?
And that's where it gets tougher, because most people say it would be really helpful if he could win Virginia, but he doesn't look like he's going to win Virginia. It's been a long time, and this is back to where you could talk about Pennsylvania, because sometimes people see Pennsylvania as a swing state, but if you don't, well, then that's where you get that 240 number that you have that Tim was mentioning just a minute ago. So if you assume that Pennsylvania is not up for grabs and Virginia's not, then he really has to sort of sweep the table of the remaining toss-up states, and that would be Iowa, Ohio, Florida for sure, he's got to try to see if he can pick off Wisconsin or Michigan or something, because if you assume that he doesn't have Pennsylvania and Colorado, which are also somewhat swing states, it is a really tough situation for Donald Trump. And when you add to it, then, of course, all the concerns we've expressed about the things that he says, and also just the growing number of prominent Christians who are saying they cannot in good conscience vote for Donald Trump. Remember, again, Donald Trump won the evangelical vote. I mean, he didn't win it in Iowa because that's where Ted Cruz won it. But by the time he got to South Carolina, he did, and that's because of the endorsement of some of those Christian leaders like Jerry Falwell Jr. and Robert Jeffress and people like that. Now you have the opposite happening. You have Russell Moore, Max Lucado, Al Mohler, a lot of these individuals who are kind of Christian leaders saying they can't in good conscience vote for Donald Trump. If he cannot depend upon the evangelical vote, then that's why he could lose states like Georgia and even maybe other southern states, which really
if a Republican loses Georgia for the presidential race, then we must start looking in the book of Revelation. I think that's in the Revelation. And thus the end is near when Georgia votes Democrat in a presidential election. That happens. You're probably not going to see a Republican president again in our lifetime.
Very true.
I don't mean to depress people who vote Republican, but I mean, Republicans will still do well in the governor's races, Senate, House, those kinds of things. But the map, the Electoral College map, favors Democrats for the foreseeable future because they don't even have to work for California, New York, or Illinois, or Illinois, I would think, because of Chicago. These big cities control our country now, which is, ironically, was the reason the Electoral College was created, to keep that from happening. But basically, New York, L.A., San Francisco, Philadelphia, Miami, Chicago. You got about 7 or 8 cities that control our country as destiny as far as presidential elections. And those people are, those people who live there, they're voters too. You know, they have, just because they live in a big city doesn't mean they shouldn't have the right to vote. I'm just saying they're all Democrats. And so that's the reason for the challenge, if you will, for any Republican candidate to be president. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim Wildman, along here with Dr. Ray Pritchard and Kirby Anderson. Kirby, what does Donald Trump mean when he says it's rigged?
Do you know what he means by that?
I don't know what he means by that. I know voter fraud is a serious concern. I remember the lady in Ohio, you know, when she was on TV saying after she voted for Obama 3 times, I think she said, because he deserved it. You remember that? I mean,
yep. So that one precinct up there in Michigan where they had 110% voter turnout. That was patriotic.
And so do you know what he means specifically when he talks about it being rigged?
Well, you know, certainly in the primary, he argued that the way these rules were in different places, like in Wisconsin and Colorado, it was rigged. I don't think it's rigged in the sense of that you know, that there are games being played. But it is more of a challenge, as we just said, for an individual that is running. But back to your issue of voter fraud, you know, John Fund has been following this for years and points out that we have all sorts of really significant issues still with voter fraud. And everybody says, no, that's just done. Matter of fact, we've had votes right now in various judges that have declared whether it's North Carolina, Texas, or Wisconsin, their voter ID laws are unconstitutional. And all you have to do is, I know you probably interviewed James O'Keefe, you know, he's the investigative reporter, and he goes out there, and this time, just because Michigan had their new voter ID law, what it says is that if you don't have an ID, you can still get a ballot if you fill out an affidavit. So he's got a great sense of humor. He went into a poll and pretended he was the Detroit mayor, Mike Dugan. Then he went into a poll and pretended he was Wayne State University Law School Dean Jocelyn Benson, and then pretended he was Nancy Coffer, and at one point even pretended he was the Michigan rapper Eminem, and in every case they were willing to give him a ballot. So it shows you that even when you have a voter ID law, there is a lot of chance for mischief out there.
So Kirby, to most of us, when we hear about a voter ID law, this seems like common sense. Surely we don't want people voting multiple times or pretending to be Eminem or whatever. What's the argument against the voter ID law?
The argument is only one, and it comes back again and again, that it's racially discriminatory and it's unnecessary. You know, basically that
minorities can't get driver's license. Minorities can't get an ID. That's nuts.
My argument is, you know, to live in this world, you have to have a photo ID.
Right.
To get on an airplane. To rent a video. My goodness.
I know.
Check out a book at the local library. This is not an overwhelming burden. And
no.
It certainly isn't racially discriminatory.
No, that's just what that is they don't want you to uncover voter fraud. That's what that is. And Democrats, I don't know. The Democrat governor of Virginia, I mentioned this yesterday, the day before, he wanted felons to vote. Remember that?
Oh, yeah, that is absolutely true.
McAuliffe, he wanted he went to bat for the felons. He wanted them to be able to vote. He thought that was a good cause to take up there in Virginia. It was only the Supreme Court of the state who rejected that. He tried to do it, and
you know why he did it, because he wanted to make sure his friend Hillary Clinton won, because
right.
Virginia is a swing state.
She would get the felon vote.
Just the felons to vote, that might be the difference in
Do they have a convention? Virginia. Is there like a convention of felons where Hillary can go and speak and say I appeal to you, I'm your person, I'm please vote for me? I don't know if they have any kind of a convention like that. But anyway, the governor was denied that because the state Supreme Court said you can't do that unilaterally. He tried to do it without even going through the state legislature. It just seems like to me that the voter fraud, these things are always the people that don't want the IDs are the Democrats. So why is it always the Democrats that are trying to, it just seems that way to me, trying to make sure you can't find out whether there's voter fraud or not. That just, maybe that's just a perception I have, but it just seems like that's always the case. Do you think Donald Trump can stay on message, control his?
Oh, that's a big question. That is the number one question.
Okay.
I had a father who was involved in California politics, you know, he was a California Republican state assembly and everything. And there is a lot of similarity between my father and Donald Trump, you know. And there were days when I just would say, you don't need to say this, or something would occur to him, and then he would bring it out and go, oh, you know, and everybody in the audience at the same time would just sit there and go, and of course, he's my dad, so I'm going, Dad, why did you say that, you know, and it's the same thing. There are just days when Donald Trump will circle back to something like Rafael Cruz meeting with, you know, the people in Dallas, or he, you know, circles back to something that was said at the Democratic convention, which wins him no favor
right.
at all. And then gives the Khan family a national platform for 2 weeks. And he has got to stay on message and have more discipline if he even has a chance of winning.
Ray, and Kirby, to Trump's defense, he creates a lot of his own problems, no doubt about that, with his mouth. But the media hates his guts. and they are going to do – I saw a report last night. I was watching TV, and they were saying, like, the media is four times as much coverage of Trump's, quote, missteps or scandals as there was of Hillary Clinton's. So the liberal media – well, they're always this way, but they really are coming – they've almost taken the pretense away, haven't they, Kirby?
Yeah, and matter of fact, there was an editorial the other day in the New York Times in which they basically said that we think that Donald Trump is so dangerous that we're not going to be objective anymore. We're going to warn the nation about how dangerous it would be if Donald Trump were the president. So, you know, they've always been biased, but now they're not even hiding it. I mean, they're actually justifying it in at least one of the editorials in the New York Times. And that, I think that tells you everything.
You know, Kirby, one of the problems Trump faces is, you know, how does he keep his base with him? Because, you know, this devil may care, you know, caution to the wind approach. Hey, say whatever comes to mind, right? That's largely what got him through the Republican primaries. I mean, his core supporters love it. But the very things they love, that alienates the independence that he's got to have in order to win. So what does he do in these last 80-some days before the election? If he changes now, does he risk losing his base in order to get the independence? I mean, it feels to me like he's a little bit stuck here. So what can he do?
Well, and the first thing is if he could change, and of course that's a big if, because right. Ray, you've been a pastor, you know, there are pastors that just sometimes revel in getting in the front of the pulpit and saying things, and then lots of times they'll say, now don't send me any emails, or, you know, don't write me about that, you know, and you and I have a sense that there's an internal check. There's certain things I could say, but I probably shouldn't.
Right.
Thing, and but he doesn't. But let's assume that he does. I don't think he risks anything, because this is something else, Tim and Ray, that has been interesting, and I don't look at a lot of the polls, but I look at them enough just to be able to speak to those occasionally. The polls show that there is a lot of kind of hardening in the views. In other words, people who have said that they're voting for Donald Trump by now said they've already made up their mind, much more as a percentage than, say, Mitt Romney 4 years ago or John McCain 8 years ago. So there are a number of people that sort of have the mindset, I don't really care what he says. I recognize how important he is. And because either I believe in him or because I believe how important the Supreme Court is, and how the next president will appoint anywhere from 1 to 3 Supreme Court justices. He can do a lot of things and say a lot of things. I'm not leaving the base. So his base is okay. The big question is, if he gives more speeches like he did at the Democratic Economic Forum on Monday on his economic policies, if he goes back and talks about some of the foreign policy issues and defeating ISIS, and if he can bring up things like the Clinton Foundation and all the new emails that have just come out that look even worse for her, then I think he's got a real chance, because I don't think those people are going to leave him. They've already pretty much made up their minds. The real question is, the very small percentage of individuals in America, some people said it could be as small as 300,000 people that still are in swing states that haven't made up their minds. And that may even be a high number. And that's really who he has to convince if he wants to win the election.
Kirby, before we take a break, what's your website and what's there?
Oh, sure. The website is probe.org, probe.org. And of course, you've also mentioned that I host a program called Point of View, and that's pointofview.net. And if you're looking for some of the facts and figures we're talking about, especially some of my commentaries, which air on American Family Radio, those would be some great places to get that and use that to convince your friends, neighbors, and coworkers about some of these issues.
Talking to Kirby Anderson, and much more to discuss when we get back from the break. So we'll do that with Kirby and Ray. So you stay with us.
I think I've got a
stumper
for you this week.
Trivia Friday. You know you laugh, and you know you always learn something.
What vegetable did an ancient Egyptian place his right hand when taking an oath?
That's funny now, but put yourself in my place.
That funny, Jim?
It is.
But listen to the question.
Trivia Friday. You'll want to tune in. 10 a.m. Central on American Family Radio.
On the first day of our tour of Israel, we will stand on the Mount of Olives and look out over the old city of Jerusalem. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. March 9 through 17, we'll be going to Israel, the Holy Land. This is 2017, of course. We'll be flying from New York City, JFK Airport, direct to Tel Aviv, and then we'll begin our 9-day tour of Israel, including Jerusalem, Bethlehem, Jericho, Tiberias, Nazareth, the Sea of Galilee, the Jordan River, and all the places you've read about since you were a child in the Bible. For more information on this tour, you can order a brochure by calling us at 800-FAMILIES.
800-FAMILIES, option 5. Also, you can visit the website twholyland.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and commentary next. Big controversy brewing in Charlotte, North Carolina. The school district there recommending teachers stop calling children boys and girls. The new guidelines are part of a bully prevention regulation. Apparently, calling a boy is now considered offensive in Mecklenburg County, North Carolina. Instead, teachers were told to start calling the children scholars and students. The new guidelines would also permit boys who identify as girls to play on the basketball teams of their choosing. They would also be allowed to attend all-girl overnight field trips. Another part of the policy is on hold pending a court ruling, had to do with bathrooms. The regulation would have allowed boys who identify as girls to use the ladies' room. I'm old school, folks. Back when I was a kid, there were only two genders, male and female, and school was about reading and writing, not gender fluidity. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim Wildman. With Dr. Ray Pritchard, if you want to listen to AFR and you don't get one of our over-the-air radio stations, I think the word is terrestrial, if you don't get one of those, then you can listen on the internet. AFR.net, 24/7, AFR.net, listen to American Family Radio on the internet. We also have free apps for your mobile devices like cell phones and iPads and such. So just download the app. Takes you about 60 seconds to download it, and then you can listen to AFR on your phone or your iPad or your anywhere in the world, as long as you got, you know, high-speed internet access. So check that out and take advantage of that. We have thousands and thousands of people who listen to us every day using these apps. So you don't even have to live in an area anymore that has AFR radio stations. You can listen with the app. It's really, really a great way. I've mentioned before, we have a lot of people who move away. They listen to AFR, get used to it, and then they have to move somewhere where we don't have a radio station. Well, then they get the app, and they're happy again. So make sure you take advantage of that and tell your friends and family about that. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I am Tim Wildman with Dr. Ray Pritchard. Ray's joining me from Dallas. He's co-host with me on Tuesdays and Thursdays when he's available. And today we're talking to Kirby Anderson of Probe Ministries and the radio program Point of View. And we've been talking about the presidential race between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. And Kirby, one question I have, and then Ray can take it in whatever direction you want to change subject or whatever, but the Hillary Clinton, I don't know that I can ever remember a presidential candidate that is distrusted by the vast majority of Americans. I think somewhere between 60% and 70% when say she's not trustworthy or she's dishonest, scandal-ridden, and she's leading in the polls. This is like the Twilight Zone or something like that. What do you make of that? Does that just show you just how much people are worried about Trump? I mean, I don't know. What does that say?
Well, first, let's again establish that neither of these candidates are trustworthy, and yet the untrustworthy factor is much greater for Hillary Clinton than it is for Donald Trump.
Right.
So there is where, you know, even though you can only sometimes have half of the country or the people polled say they trust Donald Trump, you can get more sometimes than 30% in some of these polls for Hillary Clinton, depending on which state you look at. So this is a major problem for that campaign. And one of the reasons why some people have said, you know, if we'd had any other of these other 17 candidates, probably they would have been doing a little better than Hillary Clinton right now.
You mean than Donald Trump?
Yeah, I mean, some people said out of the 17, there are only two that probably would be in the situ- situation, George Pataki and maybe Donald Trump, because they would assume that any of the other ones, whether it's Ted Cruz or Marco Rubio or even Jeb Bush, would be doing much better because
right.
the trust factor would be much greater for them. But nevertheless, it is odd. And Tim, I think it illustrates a few things. First of all, there are a lot of people that are driven so much by ideology that even if they feel like an individual they're putting in office is a crook, well, it's our crook, you know, kind of mindset. and that's part of it. And then the other part
of it is, great,
that'd
be honest, great.
I don't think the press has not done a very good job. You go out in the streets, you know, you do this today in Tupelo, I'll do it in Dallas. I'll
right.
go out there and just talk to a few people. Do you know anything about the Clinton Foundation? I go, well, I don't know. Do you know anything about the Clinton emails? Well, I just heard Bernie Sanders say that it's not important.
Okay, right.
So it must not be important. If they had even a little bit of an understanding, and that's why I think it's so important
right.
for everybody to listen to American Family Radio, they would know this is a major issue.
Right.
Sir, if Hillary Clinton could not, if she were not running for the presidency, probably qualify for a security clearance. And here we are. There is a majority of Americans right now that said they would vote for her anyway.
Thus, Twilight Zone. Well, they're given the choice between Clinton and Trump, and so and this is Ray. You can comment on this. And what I'm about to say, everybody knows, but please don't misinterpret it as necessarily as my view. I'm just trying to sort out, like Ray and Kirby, where the American people are in general right now. This may change. After Labor Day, when you get into the debates, if Donald Trump does great and Hillary Clinton does really bad, then maybe he could move up and take the lead and perhaps win. So I'm not discounting that possibility. I'm just saying I think people, the people in the, a lot of people in this country look at it and they go, she's a liar and he's whacked. So I got to choose between... crazy and crooked, okay? That's how a lot of people are looking at this. Now, Ray, am I wrong? You think?
No, I think that's exactly the way. Look, this is a game in part of PR and public perception, right?
Right.
I mean, he has pounded Hillary over and over,
right.
crooked Hillary, right?
Right.
So
right.
that has really stuck. And she has been pounding him right back. He's crazy. He's unstable.
Right.
He's a loose cannon. You can't have him anywhere around the nuclear codes. And so both of them are going to be firing away on this. So I'm not surprised, Kirby, that it seems to me we almost have a record number of voters. I don't know. Maybe you go back and find this to be not quite true. But it seems to me a record number of voters this year who are basically unhappy with both candidates. I can remember there's always been dissatisfaction, but it seems like a clear majority of Americans, they wish they had some other choices, which puts us in, makes for a very volatile election campaign.
It certainly does. And again, the best example I can come up with is in 1972, you had Richard Nixon running for re-election. A lot of people thought he was a crook. A lot of people thought he was probably involved in Watergate, which turned out he was. He's running against George McGovern. And then George McGovern, if he wasn't a flawed enough candidate, then he had to pick a second vice president because the one he put forward was not acceptable to people. And so what you might have in this particular case, which might bode well for Donald Trump, is just there's a lack of enthusiasm. I mean, you got to admit one thing. If you've ever been to a Donald Trump rally, there's a lot of enthusiasm there. And Hillary Clinton, you know, they try to sequester her because they're not so sure about her health and about whether or not she would have, you know, a seizure or all the other questions that have surfaced around her health, but also just the fact that there's just so little enthusiasm for Hillary Clinton compared to, say, 8 years ago, the incredible enthusiasm that was there for Barack Obama. So a low turnout with enthusiastic individuals. And then back to Tim's point, a lot of people don't like Donald Trump because of what he says, but there are even more people that don't like Hillary Clinton because of what she does. In the end, some people might say, I don't like what he says, but at least I think he might really want to make America great again. But I'm really fearful of what Hillary Clinton will do, and that might be another factor that changes the equation between now and November.
Kirby, let me ask you to unravel something for us. Drudge Report a couple days ago had this big you know, boxcar size headlines about Julian Assange and WikiLeaks and this fellow who was murdered not too many days ago in strange circumstances. With it, it can you put the pieces together? Because what's the implication of this, and how does this tie in potentially to the Clinton campaign?
Well, and again, there have been some very good articles coming out, one by Rachel Alexander called The Clinton Body Count, and I'll come back to that just a minute, but she's talking not just about Seth Rich, who I'm going to focus most of her time and attention, but Sean Lucas and John Ash and some others. But the reason that one was so important is that one of these individuals that was killed that was tied to the Clinton campaign and the Democratic Party is this man by the name of Seth Rich, who was shot in the back. It was said it was a murder, but the victim still had his wallet, they had his watch, he had his phone. It certainly didn't look like a murder, and he is one that has actually been involved in really digging up some of this information. And so Julian Assange, people might not remember who he is, but the head of WikiLeaks actually said that Seth Rich was maybe one of those individuals that actually got those Hillary Clinton emails from the DNC. So it wasn't maybe Russian hackers, it was somebody on the inside. And so you have, once again, this issue of the Clinton body count. Now, Tim, you might remember back in the 1990s when Marlon and I used to do radio programs, we talked about the Clinton body count back then. And for some of our younger listeners, they haven't heard about this, but there were all sorts of people associated with the Clintons who died under mysterious circumstances. And when people bring this up, they always say, well, these are just coincidences. And I always like to play this game. Tim and Ray, do you know anybody in your life that's ever died under mysterious circumstances? And the answer is probably zero. Do you know people that know that? No. Oh, yeah, but of course, you're just, you know, average, everyday people. Well, okay, have we ever talked about the Bush body count or even the Obama body count? But we're talking about, and we have for three decades now talked about the Clinton body count. And back all the way when, actually, interestingly enough, when Bill Clinton was governor. Now, again, go to California right now. Do we talk about a Jerry Brown body count? No. Do we talk about in New York? You just think about any governor in any state or any presidential candidate. But it is amazing. It's just the most incredible coincidence, if it's not true, that people associated with the Democratic National Committee or with the Clinton family in one way or another, just a significant number of them show up.
For those who don't know exactly what we're talking about, this is not National Enquirer stuff, folks. This is a legitimate news story. What happened, what was it, a week ago?
Yes.
Okay, what happened in Washington, D.C.? It was a fellow by the name of Seth Rich, and he is a staffer on the Democrat National Committee. And he was walking in his neighborhood at 4 o'clock in the morning. I don't know where he was going, but he was going to see his girlfriend?
He just left.
Left his girlfriend. So he was shot in the back, correct?
Right.
Shot in the back 4 times. But it wasn't a robbery because whoever shot him didn't go get his wallet or his watch or his cell phone, anything of value on his person, which you would think if this is a robbery, certainly you would go get the man's wallet. But no, he was just gunned down. And so what happened was, this fella in with WikiLeaks, which was the one who dropped all the emails before the Democrat National Convention, which blew that whole place up for 24, 48 hours. The fella's name is Julian Assange. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yes, Assange.
Assange. He's the WikiLeaks founder. WikiLeaks is a place where they take hacked emails, I guess, and release them to the public to embarrass somebody. That was a bad. So evidently, this fellow's got something against the Clintons, so he's the one that has suggested in the last 24 hours that this Mr. Rich, who was murdered, might have something to do with leaking of those emails. That's the story. It's in the New York Daily News. It's all over the place. So again, that's not That sounds like a John Grisham novel.
Yeah.
But that those are the facts. Those are the facts, right, Kirby?
Sure.
Okay.
And again, for our younger listeners, this is not the first time. I mean, you got Victor Thorne that wrote all those books about the Clintons, and then supposedly he committed suicide when he was up in this mountain home, and I think that looks pretty strange. And of course, we've had Larry Nichols. We used to have him on Point of View on a regular basis, and there's a guy that actually said he was a hitman for the Clintons, and used to say when we would talk to him, I'll call you from another phone. I won't tell you which state I'm in. And
just
at one point, even on the program, he said, you know, I want you to know that I am not suicidal. I have no desire to kill myself. And so if you ever hear that I've committed suicide, no, they got to me. So these are the kinds of things that have been around for decades.
Yeah, when something happens like this, it's just weird. You just go, what in the world? You know, why would somebody just gun down this fella in 4 a.m.? 4 a.m. murdering somebody is, you know, that's almost like you're lying in wait. Think about that for just a minute, because it's almost like whoever did this was trying to send a message. I mean, really, because
through any other data analyst.
Yeah, most of your, thugs, you know, they've been going to do their crimes between 10 and 1, probably. 4 a.m., that's even late for your average robber, you know, I would think, to be just hanging around, you know, waiting on somebody to come. It sounds very fishy and suspicious is what I'm saying, who knows why, but it sounds like somebody wanted him dead. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. We've been talking about presidential race between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. I don't think any of us listening or talking about this have ever seen anything quite like it, where you have a leading candidate, that is Hillary Clinton, where she's distrusted by the majority of Americans, yet she's leading in the polls. And then on the other side, you have Donald Trump, which nobody's ever seen anything like him before, running for president in terms of his flamboyance and his bravado and his loose lips, which work to his advantage, as Ray said, but also work to his disadvantage. Let me just put it that way in many respects. Kirby, let's turn our attention to some international affairs. What do you make of the $400 billion that we sent in Iran?
With an M, yeah.
Okay, here we go with another John Grisham novel. I guess Tom Clancy. We're going to switch over to a Tom Clancy novel right here. The President of the United States, Barack Obama, authorizes $400 billion be sent on an unmarked cargo plane, and it's not American dollars. It's Swiss francs and all kind of other money.
Yeah, euros and Swiss.
Euros, right? Okay.
$400 million, you know, and these are pallets full of this stuff, so it's not
pallets.
To check.
Pallets. In return, we get four hostages back, right. And one of the hostages, the pastor there,
Saeed Abedini.
Yeah, he said they were waiting on the.
Yeah, they were supposed to be there for 20 minutes. They had to spend the night there because they had to wait for this other plane.
Why does the president, though, and the State Department, why do they insist this wasn't a ransom when it was? I mean, this is like the sky. You know, this is like walking out in the middle of the day and the sun's shining, and you say, it's pitch black out here. It's so dark I can't see. And you're going, what world are you living in here? Go ahead. Comment on that.
Well, I think your point's well taken, is that it's kind of like, don't believe your lying eyes, believe what I've said. And I've started using a term, and as a matter of fact, in my commentary coming out next week, I'm going to talk about it. It's called gaslighting. Now, you may never have heard of that, but it's based on the movie and the play Gaslight, and the premise was that this individual was trying to convince everybody else that they were wrong or that they were mentally defective. And it really describes how sociopaths and narcissists try to lie and manipulate so that eventually people doubt their own perception and accept your own. And here's a good example. I mean, you've got an airlift of $400 million in euros and Swiss francs that coincide with the exact day with the release of our four American hostages. You mentioned, of course, Pastor Saeed Abedini, who said, we just had to sit there and wait until this plane landed. And then they say, well, it wasn't a ransom. And if you think about this, you know, we have lots of examples now of gaslighting. You've got the Benghazi one on September 11th, you know, looked to all of us like a terrorist attack. 150 gunmen and flak jackets and coming to the compound with guns and RPGs. We were told, no, that was just a spontaneous demonstration over an internet video. Or how about this gaslighting one when the president told us at least 30 times, if you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. If you like your plan, you can keep your plan. I mean, if this continues on, the American people, Tim and Ray, are just going to say, well, I guess I just have to believe you because every time I think it's something, you explain that it's something else. And I just think we need to recognize that for some reason, this administration wants to present its plan and its view. And even when the evidence is overwhelming on the other side, they still consistently say this.
And I have a theory on that. I have a theory on that. Ray, let me get you to comment here, too. Secular liberalism, or what you would call some people call progressivism, secular humanism, fundamentally, they do not believe in the Ten Commandments of God, for example, or a higher moral authority on truth, so that and this is not to say that Republicans can't lie, too, because we're all human. We can all lie, mislead, deceive. It's all within our own capability. I'm just saying, as a philosophy, the secular progressive movement does not believe in God, and they don't believe in moral absolutes. So if that's the case, if it advances your cause to mislead people, to lie to them, to deceive them, but that advances your cause, which in your mind is your higher, quote, good, then the end justifies the means. So that's the reason they tell these lies to get things accomplished and mislead people, and then they come back later and say, yeah, so what? We lied, but it's done. The deed is done. So I believe, Ray, you want to comment on that?
You know, just listening, I was thinking about this. In some ways, Hillary Clinton has got to be the luckiest candidate in history because, as Kirby said, you know, everybody knows, you know, who you're going to believe, me or your own two eyes, right? Well, we know. I mean, it's obvious. It was scheduled. The whole deal was scheduled to be a kind of a payoff to the Iranians. So what happens? You know, and this is going to be a big campaign issue. Then Donald Trump comes out and says, well, you know, I saw the video and they were, you know, the plane landed and they were taking the money off. And then all of a sudden he's got to backtrack and say, no, that was the video of the hostages landing in Switzerland. So she and Obama and the Democrats are able to wiggle out from under this because of Trump's inability to capitalize on something that's just dropped into his lap. To me, Kirby, that kind of like is the whole campaign in a nutshell at this point. Or the thing about the emails, which we haven't even talked about yet. The new emails come out, and then Trump does this thing about the Second Amendment, folks, and all that, and it takes the focus away from the issue. Wow, what a campaign.
But again, Tim, you're right, because we do have to recognize that we expect people to tell the truth. And if
right.
you start from a secular, progressive, humanistic assumption, no, don't have to tell the truth. And
no.
So the American people allow that to take place.
It's kind of like communism. Communism, you know.
Don't have to tell you the truth.
Communism uses lies to advance their agenda. And they don't have a problem with that because they don't believe there's any consequences to lying because there's no God to punish you. So it's the same with Islam. Islam, there's a teaching inside Islam that if you have to use deception to conquer the infidel, you do it. because it doesn't matter because it's the infidel. You know, so Allah is pleased when you conquer the infidel or kill the infidel. And if you have to use lies and deception, that's just part of how it works. And it doesn't displease Allah or go against the Quran. That's a teaching you have to, that's a philosophy inside communism that they've used for centuries. So if you're a group of people, and you're secular humanist or secular progressives or secular liberals, and you don't, now that's not to say all those people who subscribe to that would say it's okay to lie. I'm just saying that philosophy has no moral foundation. With Republicans, I hate to put this in political party terms, but I think there's enough Christians involved in the Republican politics that you could not get away with what a lot of the Democrats get away with internally. If I think, for example, and again, this is not to say that people are in the Republican Party are perfect or that Christians are perfect, but for example, I'll give you an example. If a Republican Secretary of State had done what Hillary Clinton did by putting her own, a Republican had put his own private server in his house and exposed our national secrets to the world so carelessly and recklessly, if not illegally, then I think the Republican Party itself would have said, you're unfit, you're disqualified, we rebuke you, and you will certainly not be our candidate for president. I think that would have taken place with the Democrats because they have so many secular progressives in their movement. They don't care about that. It's only the secular liberal agenda that matters. And she's the best standard bearer for that in their minds, despite the fact that Bernie Sanders got a lot of the support. So, Kirby, did I say anything that made sense right there?
Makes a lot of sense. And a good example is looking when there's a scandal with a Republican leader, politician, member of Congress, somebody in the bureaucracy, almost always you'll have the Republican senators or congressmen come up to them and say, it's time for you to resign.
Right.
Look at the number of Democrats that, whether it's Bill Clinton, decides, you know, I'm going to let you impeach me, but I know I'm going to win anyway. I'm not going to step down. And all sorts of other issues that have over the years. And of course, as you said, the Hillary Clinton example is a good one. If Condoleezza Rice had done what Hillary Clinton had done, there would be repercussions, and nobody would have seriously talked about her ever serving in government again. But Hillary Clinton now says, not only am I going to serve in government, I'm going to be the president, and I'm going to have a security clearance, which I would not qualify for if I weren't the candidate for the United States presidency.
Why don't you think the secular humanists or secular progressives care about truth and honesty for the reasons I mentioned?
They should care, but they don't. And, you know, again, some of our humanist friends, our atheist friends will say, it's possible to be good without God. And we don't disagree with that. I mean, I meet lots of good atheists. But the point is there's no philosophical or moral foundation for it. Yes, you can be good without God, but if you don't believe in God, you don't believe there are any absolute
right.
moral standards, then it's just as easy for you to be just a reprobate.
Right. Anyway, Kirby, thanks so much for being on with us. What website again do you recommend?
Yeah, pointofview.net be a good place to go, and looking forward to the next opportunity.
Pointofview.net?
Yes.
Okay, thanks, Kirby. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, Ray and I will be back with another Ray coming up the next half hour. Ray Comfort. He's got a brand new project out, and it's called The Atheist Delusion. You don't want to miss our discussion with Ray on how to witness to atheists. We'll be back in 5 minutes after the news.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.